Previously on The Droids, part 4 of Duel of the Fates, the breakdown of the Colin Trevorrow and Derek Connolly script. Will we complete it in part 5? Find out this week! Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, Ryan, and Sam, I am Mike, back with part 5 of our discussion of Duel of the Fates, the leaked script for episode 9. Will this end the journey for us? We'll find out in the next hour. I really don't know. This might be the conclusion. We might be going on to part 6. This may be what we do on this podcast, and it never ends from this point forward. Guys,
in honor of Star Wars, we may go to part 6, think that it's over, and then go to part 9.
And then don't forget about
the alternate part 9.
Yeah,
talk about that.
Exactly. Don't forget about once George Lucas gets a hold of this script.
So what you're saying, Chris, is that we're going to destroy the Falcon.
It's going to happen.
In our part 9, not, part 2, 9.2, we destroy the Falcon.
It'll be a Lego Falcon about one-sixth the size.
Chris did famously say, if they destroy the Falcon, I want their agendas out of here.
Exactly.
There is news this week. We will talk more about it in our next podcast. There has been rumors, not confirmed, but I think it's Variety reporting, that Leslie Headland, who worked on, directed, co-wrote Russian Doll on Netflix with Natasha Lyonne, is going to have her own Star Wars series on Disney Plus. Very exciting news because we get a different voice in Star Wars. But let's talk more about that as we get into next week. I feel like right now I'm already setting us up for a conversation, but we're going to save that for our next podcast. Talk about what she's said already about Star Wars in the past. There's a great red carpet interview that she did at The Rise of Skywalker. So excited to get into more of that. But where we left off, the Battle of Coruscant was about to begin. We knew that Finn had already made his effort, and there was the larger battle is going to take place, but Finn had already been starting the uprising on the planet. Rose was being interrogated, but trying to make her escape. R2 and C-3PO were there alongside Finn. A stormtrooper had become Rafe following his conversation with Finn. And then Rey and Kylo on Mortis had their first portion of their lightsaber battle. We found out that Rey knew from her own Force sense that Kylo had killed her parents, and where that conversation would lead the two of them was into what we can assume to be one of the most epic lightsaber battles, following up what we saw in The Force Awakens between the two of them, with a final confrontation at the end of the Duel of the Fates. So that's where we're left. Leia, Poe, Chewie, they're all out in space getting ready to make their move to Coruscant, and we pick it up from there. So when we start here as our part 5 edition, I love a moment in this, and I think I've talked about this several times. Chewbacca is not allowed to fly the Falcon. There's a great moment earlier on in the script where Poe and Rey make a joke about how it's their ship or they're doing this thing, and Chewbacca's like, excuse me? But then later on, we now get to the point that this decision has been made where Poe has really convinced Leia that they need to make the jump to hyperspace to go and help at the capital city the uprising that Finn has begun. And they have to go and get to their ships. And we see Poe making a run with BB-8 and Chewie, and they're making their way to the Falcon. And as they're on the way to the Falcon, Poe yells, no, we don't have enough pilots. Get out there and do some damage. And Chewie goes, roar. And he says, I don't know. Pick one, because Chewie is picking a different ship. He's not flying the Falcon. And Chewie heads his way to an orange X-Wing, cocks his head, looks at it. I can envision that perfectly. But I love this whole sequence, and it ends up leading to a point where Chewbacca takes out 3 TIE fighters in one shot with an X-Wing, and Poe says, that's one hell of a pilot. And that's a great callback, and I love that.
It's a callback, yeah.
But I feel uneasy that Chewie's being treated this way to not be the pilot of the Falcon. I mean, this is his ship.
It is weird that Poe said, for a Wookiee, at the end of that.
For a Wookiee.
Chewie, you know, the perpetual bridesmaid. I have some questions logistically. Like, did they have to extend the cabin of the X-Wing a little bit? I'm not positive.
He fits. Yes, no.
Also, his head sticking out the top of the cockpit?
Are we,
I don't think that's...
Well, they did say he's not wearing a helmet.
Chewie, are we to believe that Chewie doesn't know what ship he's even flying in when he's in the Falcon. He just kind of like, oh, this one, I'll just pick this one. Ooh, I'm back in the Falcon.
The idea that, like, Chewie is, like...
Has he never seen an X-Wing?
Yeah.
Well, the idea that he's, you know, he's been described as, like, initially conceived as kind of, like a space dog, like Han Solo's dog, you know, or faithful, like, companion, and it's like... If he had the perception of a dog, where it's just like, oh, I'm in this space now, cool.
Yeah, he has no object permits.
He has a wife and a kid, and he chose to hang out with Han Solo.
Well, that's the problem that comes when you start. Not the problem, but it's the dichotomy that emerges, because if you look at Chewbacca as a space dog, which we shouldn't. But when you look at him like that, all of his choices make more sense at the beginning. But when you when you're like, no, he's like a fully, like, you know, conscious being with a life, then you start giving him more agency, and you have to start wondering why he's doing what he's doing.
Why's he acting that way?
Like, why is he such a negligent father? Why is he away so much?
Why did those two stormtroopers think that he would eat a person?
No, I like this scene too, Mike. I like the thing that precedes it, and I think we hit on this line last week, but the Leia's line about, you know, we've only got 100, like, what are, we've only got 100 pilots, and Poe's response is plus one, and Chewie roars, and he goes, sorry, plus two. And it's this idea,
yeah,
like,
come back,
I feel like this whole sequence is in a way a sort of payoff. This is the version of, I feel like this is kind of the response to, like, the fan, like, criticism of Chewie always being a bridesmaid. You know, it's we're going to acknowledge it, but also while still wanting, you know, the Falcon to be central to one of our lead heroes in a speaking role, you know, where you can have somebody, you know, like firing off commands, talking to the co-pilot, that kind of thing. I get where your frustration comes in, Mike, or where you're like, Chewie should be in the Falcon. I get that. But I do think the idea of stuffing a giant Wookiee into an X-Wing is hilarious. And the idea
visually,
that he'd be great and the reversal of, you know, Poe watching from the Falcon, which has sort of become the flagship of the fleet, you know, the small rebel resistance fleet. Watching someone, it helps show Poe's growth, and in a way it does show Chewie's growth, where it's like he is being acknowledged as a pilot, as his own character, as his own hero, in a way that we haven't quite seen. He's always been attached to someone else. So I actually really like the way this was all handled, and then it pays off in that great moment, like you said, where it's like, that's one hell of a pilot, which, you know, calls back to The Force Awakens in such a nice way.
Well, did you guys see that, like, yesterday they released that there was a leak of, before The Rise of Skywalker, I don't know if you know this, JJ did a pass on this script. So this scene exists in JJ's version of the script, and instead of an X-Wing, Chewie's flying a ship that's a giant metal made of metals, and he's wearing a metal.
Is it true that it fires metals and
it fires
metal bombs?
Metals. So those... TIE fighters are taken out by a bunch of metals that also land on
coins.
Other little Chewbaccas.
So they cut it. They cut it though, because Terrio thought it was too subtle, so he wanted the scene of them actually putting the metal on Chewie.
Yeah, they had a whole metal ceremony, and then they said, "We present you with this," and they smash a bottle against a ship made of metals.
I'm just imagining the TIE fighters getting shot with a metal and be like, "Oh, this is so nice," and then they blow up.
the classic TIE fighter explosion.
Yeah. One thing we didn't mention before, kind of this attack begins and the fleet joining in with the ground assault on Coruscant, is there's written in the script, Leia spins around in the chair once occupied by Ackbar. And I'm imagining, like, the shot exactly as it was with Ackbar, except this time it's Leia, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
How dare they compare her to Ackbar? How dare she sit in that seat?
You know, from Ackbar's race, we really don't know whether he's male or female, but I can promise you the legions of fandom menace people out there probably always said he was male.
The indignation people have, and I know this is the point you were just making, Ryan, but, like, just the indignation people have about, like, how Ackbar is treated is, like, the same of just, like, the weird, like, reverence and obsession with Boba Fett around just like, it's a thing that looked cool that we like latched onto for a moment, but like, it's just a fundamental misunderstanding of like, look at the bigger story. Look at what they're trying to do.
They're in the middle of an intergalactic chase scene. They didn't have time to have a funeral for Ackbar.
Right. Yeah,
and then at
it's
the end of the movie, we all have to watch a funeral for Ackbar.
That's the post-credit scene.
You have to be careful with that kind of stuff because it really is a trap.
There's also a line in the script that says advanced tanks and walkers, new designs we've never seen before, which I thought was breaking the fourth wall in a really funny way.
I like that a lot.
You should have seen I was actually sitting with Doug Chang when I read that. he jumped out of his chair.
Shouldn't he be used to it by now? Doesn't he always have to design new tanks? New walkers?
I just thought they could have said like things that they've never seen before. Like they could have kept it in the characters' minds.
Yeah, they fly. Their paws have like little rocket boosters that they fly with.
So from there, after we've found out about these new tanks, new walkers, advanced designs, there's a great little moment between C-3PO, R2, and a new kind of role for C-3PO as 3PO has to go and stop a First Order astromech from sending a signal to back to the rest of the First Order, and R2-D2 tells him he needs to go and take him out. And just R2 says, "I'm not programmed for." C-3PO says, "I'm not programmed for violence." But when he goes and he pulls out the innards, and I can just imagine this scene. And I do think Anthony Daniels would have done it very well. He's like, "I do apologize for this." As he's pulling out everything, and please go quietly. And I all thought that those were really nice moments.
I could hear him doing his like vulgar voice where he's like, "Oh dear, oh dear."
Yeah.
But he's like ripping his insides.
I've done horrible things. I shall never be the same.
I did find it chilling when he put his finger against the dying droid's face and went, "Shh."
This should have been the rebirth of BB-9E. I'm a big fan of BB-9E.
I bet you it actually would have. Because they just say First Order Astromech. It could definitely be. Oh, wait, no. They do say R808. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, but I wish it was 9E. That would have been great.
Chris is trying to justify that plushie.
My God, in 30 years when Episode 11 comes out and they quickly dispatch a BB-9E without any celebration, Chris is going to be so mad.
I really like this script. I know it's got problems and we're going to get to them, but like, this is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, Anthony Daniels got quite a lot of press. We won't talk about who generated it. around his performance here.
Incoming,
you know,
transmission.
He's the actor who's been in, you know, all the Star Wars movies. And, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, the movie, like original Star Wars, opens with the droid. So he's, you know, he's a through line of this. And, he had some really heartfelt moments. But again, we've talked about how in The Rise of Skywalker, those moments, it's like, they don't actually have any weight. They don't count for anything because they're so quickly undone. And this feels to me like it would have been kind of a more harrowing and dramatic experience. And the idea that, you know, that all of our characters in this film are ultimately touched by war in a way that, I don't know, it feels so rich and interesting. And I don't think it has to get, you know, macabre or gruesome or really dark, but it is like, this movie, what I like so much about it is it shows some of the, I think, in a Star Wars way, in a still friendly and what would have been a, you know, acceptable, like, family-friendly way, an adventure story way, like, shows some of the horrors of war and, like, some of the cost in a way that we haven't seen. And that, I don't know, that feels to me like what Star Wars was always about. It was always a commentary on this kind of stuff. So, I don't know, I kind of lament that that didn't make it in.
Yeah, I think the most emotional I got in this script was related to the way you're describing this, Sam. And we're going to talk about that as it comes up. But, like, they set up another scene with C-3PO for later that calls back to everything you're saying, how he's been this through line, and C-3PO and R2. And that made me more emotional than anything. And I think that's really something that was more grounded in what war does that we don't see always in Star Wars. And I think you make a really good point with that.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Well, so from there we do see the ground troops. They see all of the different AT-ATs, AT-STs, speeders, all coming in from the First Order, but they've been modified, heavily modified, according to the script, to have revolutionary colors, eyes, and teeth. I don't know about the eyes and teeth. That seems maybe a little bit too World War II-esque, but I'm imagining Sabine Wren painting the side of these to all of the different things, designs she did in Rebels, but that would be something that would be a little more fitting. But from there, we jump back to Kylo and Rey in their lightsaber battle, really going back and forth, Kylo talking about, I could have been your teacher, I could have ended your pain, trying to like really just reinforce, then weakening. We don't get a lot of dialogue. It's mostly just the fight that's happening between the two of them, how they're evenly matched for the moment before Kylo then does get a severe strike on Rey. It's called a wicked blow across her face that instantly cauterizes a scar from the left cheek to her forehead. Quite reminiscent, quite cyclical in terms of what has happened to Kylo. She screams, clutching her eyes, and Sam, you talked about this before, she's blinded. She's crying blood as Kylo stands over her, falls backwards. Kylo says, goodbye, scavenger, and walks his way into the Temple of Mortis.
That is...
I feel like they'd have toned it down intense. A little bit, crying blood.
You think so?
I think the instant cauterization is what they would show in a Disney movie,
Also, one does kind of neutralize the other. You can't cauterize the wound and then be crying blood.
Right. But I
was crying blood before.
So she's blinded. Is she blinded by the light of the lightsaber? Or
in the road on the night.
There we go. We're not doing the Springsteen version.
Where did that come from?
Or is she? So is I'm going to say it again. Is she blinded by the light of the lightsaber, or is are her eyes cut out?
I'm sure they'll leave it a little vague.
Like, is she blind forever now?
I think she's. I thought she was blind forever. I think she was scarred. Like, I don't think that her. I don't think her eyes were like cut out. Like, I don't think they're like removed, but I think they were damaged. Like from the blade, permanently damaged.
That would have been quite a moment in the theater.
Right.
It would have been wild.
I feel like Kanan from Rebels. I mean, like what he had, kind of the glossy white eyes after having them.
Yeah. Exactly. And then you see through the Force. I think Kylo says goodbye, scavenger, that's kind of like the episode 3 turn when like Anakin kind of goes from being, it's like, oh, we lost him. He's gone. Like, it's like that turn that happens that's like really hard to pull off because... With Anakin's case, you spent 3 movies with him, and then like it's like I went back to that feeling where it's like one of those things you don't believe happens. I imagine this would have played out similarly, like where you wouldn't believe that he like said that, and that kind of confirms like, well, he's on the dark side now.
It's official.
It's official. That's when they stop and then they stamp him with a dark side thing on the screen. It goes dark side.
You know, it's interesting, though. It brings up a conversation that I've had, and obviously we need to keep going on the script. I don't want to get too off track. But different people have different wants and needs from Star Wars, as we found out in the last few years. And I had a conversation with a friend who always said, well, I don't understand why we're seeing Kylo Ren as anything but just pure evil. I don't want to see him be whiny and wavering. I want him to be the main villain. And I'm like, wow, that is not what I wanted at all.
Well, it's interesting. There is this kind of clear delineation where there are people who, like, outside of the movie can't forgive the character for killing Han Solo.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like they cannot get over that. And I think that there is this interesting delineation. If I had to guess, it has to do with age. But, and, like, experience of when they intook it. Obviously, I was upset that Han Solo was died, but, like, was killed. But I also was like, Harrison Ford definitely didn't sign on for another one of these. So it was kind of like soften that blow where I was like, yeah, like Han Solo died, but also like he was kind of already dead because we never thought that Harrison Ford would ever do this again. So we're really just getting like bonus Han time. but there are people that are like, no, he killed Han Solo. Like, I cannot forgive that. because he killed their idea of their father, I suppose. But it's a strange thing because I never thought, like, he killed Han Solo, he can never be redeemed. It's not even like a thing that crossed my mind. And I love Han Solo, don't get me wrong.
Well, actually, Ryan, I could speak to that because, like, I didn't feel, so it wasn't for me coming from a place of, like, this is an affront, or I'm so wounded by my, you know, my personal, like, favorite character being, you know, being killed on screen or anything like that. Like, it wasn't related to a personal thing, but I did have this idea of, like, within the story, I really struggled of, like, this guy killed his father, who was, like, unless they were to go and kind of, like, in some ways, character assassinate Han and, like, justify it there.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought was, like, a bad guy.
Well, here's...
Well, they kind of do in the script.
But, like, in... Yeah, they do. But not to the point of killing him, but they do give some justification. But, like, the idea of just, like... I don't know. I approach the characters, even though they're in this fantastical story and everything, there is, like, reality to the characters. There is, like, a way I relate to them. And I'm just like, if somebody killed their own father, like, I don't know that I would ever get over that. Like, it's really, like, I think it's not impossible, but I always saw it as, like, this is going to be a huge challenge to try and actually redeem this. Because if we have a redeemed and even happy, you know, Ben Solo at the end, or if they'd gone, you know, the Reylo route where they were actually together, I would have really struggled to be like, this feels weird when you go back and watch the first movie and he impales one of our beloved favorite characters who we've really only known as a good guy, a bit of a curmudgeon, but a good guy.
See, and that's, yeah, it's interesting because you are bringing into it, like, our beloved characters, which of course is the case. But to me, I guess the way that I was looking at Kylo, and especially after this script, even though I understand this is not canon, but, like, with The Last Jedi and Kylo's backstory, I was looking at it like, okay, no one should kill anyone, you know, that's one thing, but, like, in the world of the thing, I don't want Han Solo to die, but I understand why this guy killed Han Solo. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, from his point of view, I'm like, yeah I understand why he would do this.
Yeah.
And also, I think his conflict afterward softened that also, where it, like, was a thing. It's not like he was like, I would feel differently if he went to Han Solo and he was like, I can't wait to kill you. And then he just killed him. As opposed to this, like, very conflicted thing before and after that tortured him forever. So, like, I think that's where the redemptive quality of it comes from, where it's like, oh, it's not really something he wanted to do. And even when he's talking to Snoke, he's like, I didn't hesitate when the moment came. And Snoke is like, you suck.
What? No, doesn't he say, he says, like, the deed split you in two, or the deed split your purpose, something like that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do.
Yeah, so
I,
it's like this thing that it's clearly, like, killing him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I he do was just agree fulfilling that this empty prophecy kind of thing.
He's misled. He's been misled all along the way. The poor guy.
Yeah.
By Palpatine.
Right. And again, but what you're doing though, Ryan, is like you're filling in the backstory, right? You're like, you're filling in the fact that he's been misled and that he's like, and I think that works. And I think that's the way to, I guess, I don't know. I just, all I was saying was like, I don't feel like, I wasn't angry that it was like, they killed Han Solo, or like, I can't forgive that guy because he killed Han Solo and I like Han. Mm-hmm. But it was more like, I really like, I don't know if this is, like, a flaw of mine. I don't think it is, but I'm like...
Yeah, you're saying it's a jump.
I'm like, I need a justification if somebody's, like, if I'm supposed to, like warm up to somebody who I've seen kill their father, no matter who it is.
Right, I think that's why... I think that that kind of... I think that's why in The Rise of Skywalker, in a move that I don't agree with, like, from a storytelling standpoint, they needed to have Han Solo forgive him so that, like, the audience could do it.
That is, I mean, that is an interesting way to, put that. I mean, which there was obviously more going on there, but...
Yeah, from a storytelling standpoint, I think, cowardly.
I agree. Yeah. I think
they were like, let's just make it easy for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, we dug into how this script handles it in the previous episode, and it's I don't know. It all, like, really worked for me.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine how mad the fanboys would be when they found out that Han Solo was, like, really not a good dad?
Because what they do is they...
If they actually saw it on screen, because they can't just read between the lines of what happened about this relationship, yeah. because yeah. it's pretty made pretty clear in The Force Awakens.
By who his son is? That he wasn't yeah. a very good dad?
Yeah.
I think they, like, what they do is they both give a little bit of color and backstory and justification to Ben for like where he was when we met him, but they also in this script to move it forward, it's like they don't like the redemption isn't as like it's not as, you know, complete and like wholesome or like see we love him now.
Yeah,
it's more yeah. of like, I don't know, it's handled a little more like sadly and like regretful about like his path in an interesting way.
He doesn't become a comic book version of Ben Solo in the last
mm-hmm.
30 minutes. I do want to say less. I think we should start talking about in this podcast from now on BHT, bonus Han time, is a new thing we talk about all the time.
BHT.
So we're
yeah,
going
that's
BHT
time
around
is designated.
Here.
that's how time is designated.
Anytime that I mean, Harrison I'll... does a new bit somewhere, we're going to talk about this BHT. And then, Sam, I'm sad to hear that our relationship is going to end during this podcast. I don't know that you know this, but my dad and I were on a ledgeless void.
Oh, no.
And you seem to have a lot of problem with people who've killed their father. And I don't think that prejudice would stand.
Oh, no.
Mike said, you must be dispatched.
All right. Chris, you had something before we move back into the script?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I think also part of this that plays into me is that I guess ultimately this is Rey's story, and I think sometimes Kylo gets used as a little bit of a plot foil against Rey to determine like some of her choices and how she's going to react. So it's kind of like, well, here's the dark side example of what Rey's light side choice would be. And so I think sometimes it's just convenient to have Kylo do these things, so it makes like Rey can make a different choice, like gives options.
Yeah, playing it off the two of them, and that's why it's almost
as dyad.
I think it's one of the other reasons why people thought that she came from a lineage that was important to Star Wars, because it's like here's what happens within what happened to the son of Leia and Han. So pitting the generations together, and then that's when she became a Palpatine, but doesn't really play into it. But seeing how right. two different children from different families within
yeah.
it would have responded to their extreme situations or extreme power within the
exactly.
Force.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, they're calling. So it's like yeah. you have Kylo, whose calling was kind of misconstrued by his family and just very overcomplicated. Then you had Rey, who from every perspective is kind of like a clean slate. And then, so now it's like, well, so then all of a sudden she starts hanging out with her family or her proposed family, and then all these strange problems arise.
Well, as we jump back into the script.
What message are they sending? Stay away from your families.
Very hard to do right now, Chris. It's very difficult.
No, definitely do stay with your families.
We are in the First Order capital, and we find out the big surprise, which I think... there's so much that has been hinted at, and I actually love this. We've talked about how the High Republic might be this new kind of proving ground for stories that they want to bring up to films and TV, and I feel like Clone Wars and Rebels did that a bit, and now in this script, they bring some things up from The Resistance, the show, to the actual script, which was that a giant capital building could actually be a ship, very much like the Colossus in Resistance, that goes from being mm-hmm. on the planet, what you think is some sort of floating you know, base that would stay in water, it actually is a ship. So we find out from Hux and Selleck, Commander Selleck, a character that we've met in this movie, that they're readying the hyperdrive, and Rose overhears this, and she realizes that the ship... The capital is a ship, and they can escape, and the First Order can remain, even if they were to lose the battle, by escaping the planet on their capital ship. And so Rose then has to find a way to obviously do something to the hyperdrive. So she finds her old First Order ID bars that we found out very early in the script that she was collecting when they made their way onto the Eclipse, the dreadnought that they stole. And then she uses those First Order ID bars to get into a restricted area of the ship. And I love that moment because you set it up as a throwaway thing early on, Mm-hmm. It's just something about her character, something that she does and feels like these badges of honor for, you know, First Order officers that she's been defeating, not necessarily murdering, yeah. but ones that she's been defeating.
Yeah, it could get a little, the metaphor could get a little dark.
A little bit. But then she gains access to the navigation room.
She takes them out of her scalp bag.
So she gets into the navigation room, and she's able to work on dismantling the hyperdrive. That story goes a different direction from there. But I love the callback, and I love that, you know, they're thinking about what they're writing when they put it in there. Basic story.
I love a good just like engineer tinkerer character. Oh, yeah. So much. I think like it's perfect for her to fulfill that role in this. Like there, you get a little bit of hints of that in The Last Jedi, but I think it's just like it's awesome that she's like putting her abilities to use. And then in such a huge way, I think this little plot line would have been so much fun. It's a race to the clock. Got to stop them from escaping. I think, why wouldn't every building be a ship in the future?
But did it bother anyone else that like, I just read this and I was like, this should just be Babu Frick. And like, those should just be like on the base of Leia so that there's like,
totally.
Like a character that we know with Leia off screen.
She should have opened the hyperdrive computer, and Babu Frick should have been inside of it. Going, wow.
Then we find out that Babu is all—that's what all hyperdrive computers are like. So, like whenever R2 is talking to the Falcon, that's what he was talking to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All hyperdrives are these little aliens. Oh.
That's not bad, Chris. It's not a bad impression.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But I love this. I'm almost like out of things to say about how much better Rose's story is. I kind of love everything about it.
It exists.
Guys, I'm starting to think that The Rise of Skywalker really pooched it.
That's a tip of the cat to Ryan for the term pooched.
I feel like that should be a tip of the dog.
Tip of the pooch?
Tip of the pooch. Well, as we continue onward, there's some more battle on in the sky, on the surface of Coruscant. Eventually, Chewie makes his way to the surface, finds his way with Finn, but then Rose gets a message to Finn about how the ship is actually, or the capital is actually a ship, and that Rose needs R2 to transfer the hyperdrive keys to her so that she can disable the hyperdrive before it would make the jump to light speed. So this is where R2 needs to be set up to make a mission, but in it, things go awry. And I think, you know, R2 taking a direct hit from a cannon blast, and actually right before that he says to C-3PO what is translated as C-3PO says back, as R2's put on his mission to make it to a scomp link to transfer the key codes. C-3PO says that R2 passed on to him, "For glory, what are you saying, R2? There is no glory for droids." And then R2 takes a direct hit from a cannon blast. He's scorched black, unmoving, no comical beeps. And within that is kind of like this setup of the, to me, maybe one of the most emotional things is where C-3PO is telling Finn as they're trying to make their way back from the battle that he can't leave him. He can't leave R2 behind. And it just seems, you know, from the journey of these characters, as you talked about, Sam, to get to this point where on the battlefield, C-3PO can't leave what is presumed to potentially be just the shell of R2-D2 is maybe a bit too dark and devastating for this movie, but I love the idea.
Yeah.
No, I
think it's what... Oh, go ahead.
No, I do like all this stuff, and I mean, I don't know. I don't think this film would do it by the time it got made. Like, I think one of the things that we have to remember is like we're reading a fairly early. I mean, it's a developed script and it's like a full, like fully realized story. But there was still going to be so much that happened in production, and you have to remember who's making these things and who's marketing these things. And you know, I think this would have become, you know, a little bit brighter, a little bit more hopeful, a little bit more both Disney and Star Wars.
I don't want
over
that,
the course,
Sam. I don't want. I love this. Don't make that happen to me. Leave my headcanon alone.
Okay.
I'm kidding, Sam.
No, I'm saying like I don't think that they. I don't think that these moments that are heavier and that are darker would you know over dominate the movie. You know, I think there would be. I think the movie. for people who are concerned that there's some of these darker moments and images, you know, I think they would, you know, they would be part of the whole tapestry. So where I was going was that, like, I do love that this is in there, and I do love that there are actual costs and consequences and moments of, you know, you should feel a little bit of fear for R2. You know, it's like they've done that in both the previous trilogies. You know, R2, like, they, you know, they worry if he's okay in the back of Luke's X-wing, and that you see the astromech droids getting picked off the Nubian cruiser on its, you know, escape from Naboo. And so it's like there is real peril. And so the idea that we would be, even if it's, you know, that we would risk seeing and losing R2-D2 of all characters, it's like, it's harrowing, and it's interesting.
Is it strange that if Kylo Ren had killed R2-D2, I'd find it harder to buy his redemption?
If he just sliced him in half without any regard at all.
Yeah, then I'd, you know, like,
if he killed C-3PO, and he'd be like, "Hey, your dad,
that'd be
your grandpa,
I'd be fine with that.
Your grandpa built that.
He could kill C-3PO." The thing I wouldn't be able to forgive is the years of Anthony Daniels saying how he'd been wronged after that.
I think after this moment of R2-D2 taking this hit, if the rebels win, which will proceed in the script, droids would be welcomed and served in any establishment. I think they would have won the respect they deserve back, shedding the ills of their Clone War grandfathers.
Well, we did
and
see...
And R2 would be covered in gold, his own rolling metal.
But we did see that in The Mandalorian, Mos Eisley Cantina is now run by droids, and all droids are welcome. In our great introduction to one of the favorite characters in the new Disney canon, Akana Valley in space, that's where we're introduced.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to what happens right after R2 can no longer obviously get the key codes to the Scomplink to get them up to Rose to help stop the hyperdrive. It has to then fall to BB-8. And the way this is described in the script is essentially we're looking at maybe a oneer, a tracking shot that just follows BB-8 through the entire battle. It says we stay right with him, tracking past a barrage of explosions and laser blasts through moving AT-MT legs, narrowly missing craters, and falling brute troopers. So I'm imagining him essentially in the view that we saw in the very first trailer of The Force Awakens, where from the side we're watching him roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we watch that shot
beautiful
all the way through. But I also think we're seeing all these things that he's done throughout the sequel trilogy. So we see him electrify someone as he goes by. We see him light something with fire. We see him, like, maybe jump over wires, whatever it would be. And I love that idea. I wanted that so badly. And I feel like the John Williams score, having this moment where BB-8 is, like, actually our hero, is just sends my heart to the moon.
Oh,
imagine if this is where they broke the rule and they played the actual Star Wars theme. Wow.
It would have been like 1917, but all you see is feet.
All you see is feet. I almost believe it, though, is like it's a one shot, it's a tracking shot, and obviously it's going to be CGI because they can't do it for real. But it would almost be starting out wide and then zooming in as he gets closer to the Scomplink.
Oh my gosh. Mike, you should direct this scene.
I was gonna say, Mike, this is like we're getting Mike the director in here.
You should swede this scene with like action figures. I mean, we're in quarantine.
God, I want
you
to.
What else are you doing?
So I'm
you got the Legos?
Placing my order right now. Do they have? Oh no, I could use the one that's the Sphereo BB-8. That's perfect.
You actually have it.
All right. This is happening. Get ready for it.
Man, your wife's looking at quite a weekend.
But so we set up and BB-8 obviously follows through. We have that moment where C-3PO tells Finn he can't leave R2 behind. Chewie heaves R2 onto his back, and then Chewie gets hit multiple times, which seems like another devastating moment because we feel like this is the end of Chewie. That got to me as well, just like Chewie holding R2, falling to his knees, and being terrified that's going to happen.
The way Lando once held L3 while Chewie was there.
And that leads us to speaking of Lando. I don't know, Ryan, if you want to talk about the arrival of Lando Calrissian and the
Lando
smugglers
system.
I've never heard of a Lando system.
I'll be honest, Mike, you should start. I lost the page a little bit, so.
Oh, I thought I was just setting you up for a Lando. I hardly knew her.
I think this delivery was superior.
Yeah, that was much better.
I think that's exactly how this was meant to be realized.
But so in this moment, we have, you know, Poe, Leia watching the enemy ships, and actually they do cut us back to Mortis, so I think we'll have to wait for our Lando moment, because we get back to Kylo and making his way into the Temple of Mortis. And Sam, I think you've loved these episodes of Clone Wars. I've only recently seen them, but I'm envisioning what we saw in Clone Wars on Mortis, and I'm wondering where he's going to the stone slab that he's looking for, this well beneath the temple, but there's nothing there. I guess there's not really a question there, but it's just kind of like this setup is not, I don't remember that in Mortis. I don't remember there being like, oh, here's this place. From what we saw in the Clone Wars, this is where the perceived power would be.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm trying to remember, and it's been a minute since I watched them. But I mean, I remember the kind of like the burial chambers, and there's like there. I mean, mm-hmm. It's definitely here. I guess reading this, I guess my answer is like no, I don't remember that image or like where exactly that would be, but all of it rang very true to me to like what I'd seen of Mortis on the Clone Wars, and I was still picturing like that environment and that mm-hmm. world. I don't know, it'd probably just be like up at the big Citadel, right? Where the tall skinny guy lives.
Yeah. I did think it was weird that as soon as he entered into the temple, he turned into a little baby and he had a little baby diaper on and like his clothes were too big. I didn't understand that.
The helmet fell off and crawling out from under
the helmet
was a baby.
Yeah, the helmet fell off and he just was crawling around with the lightsaber. It was a very strange choice, but I get it. Messing with time, it's kind
of
cool.
Well, but so this entire mission of Kylo, the purpose of his MacGuffin in this entire script has been to get to Mortis to find the last bit of power. Tor Vallum said it was there. He goes, there's nothing there. Searches, there's no answers, there's nothing. And then Luke arrives. And we get Luke Skywalker stepping into the light. A thin blue glow traces his form. And we have this back and forth between Kylo and Luke. And this sets up to me, I was fully bought in. I know there are problems with this script, but I don't know. I'm a kid in this and just loving this interaction. And then the interaction of what it leads to with what I feel is one of the best voiceovers in Star Wars, if it were to have happened. Maybe not everybody took it that way, but, you know, this interaction back and forth between Kylo. Luke says, the dark side failed you like it failed my father. Kylo says, your father was weak. And then Luke says, his love for his family saved him. I wish it could save you. And that was pretty beautiful to me.
The only part of this scene I don't like is that he says, I'll be stronger than any Skywalker has ever been. And Luke says, you are no Skywalker. Because it's just like, come on with this stuff.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Because it's just like, I understand that Anakin was redeemed and that's great and that's like that whole story and and like I love that, but also like it's not like this idea of like the Skywalker name meaning so much. It's like you have like two like mass villains involved, one of which turned at the end, and then like, you know, Luke was fine, he's good, but like it's just like this strange like self-aggrandizing thing. And it's again like giving too much power to that name, I think, like within the world of the thing, not to us, the audience. It's conversing with the audience and not the people in the movie.
Well, and it's also kind of a weird message that it's like this doesn't quite feel like what. And I, you know, this is not. I'm trying to avoid like this doesn't feel like Luke, but it doesn't feel like necessarily the Luke we saw to be like, oh yeah, you can disown the history you don't want to accept. You know, it feels like actually part of Luke's journey was like embracing the good and evil in everyone, embracing the gray and like all of that and like choosing light. And so the idea that, the line rings a little hollow, that it's, I get what they're going for, but it just feels like, you're a Skywalker and, you know, like, I don't know, it's more of like, yeah, you're a disappointment of a Skywalker or something, you know.
I read it as like, so when Luke, I don't know, I just realized I mixed up the lines. I was reading it along. Yeah, I think it's kind of like you don't deserve to be kind of thing, and it just it doesn't really fit. It doesn't seem like as empathetic as like Force using Luke should be.
It's also like not like, it's not cohesive to like how Luke was in The Last Jedi, which is what this is following up. You know, like talks about like the mighty Skywalker blood is this thing like where he's like, what a mistake to like think of it that
way.
Or
it could be, or it could be like a nod to be like, you're not a Skywalker, you're a Solo.
Yeah. If this was like a if this is like a Judd Apatow movie, there would be this like weird like meta stop where they'd be like, because I'm a Solo. And he'd be like, well, no, your mom's a Skywalker. I guess she took the, you know, like it'd be a whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Or something like that. Or like you're your father's son, you can't escape it, or something like that.
Also, your birth certificate says Solo, so technically you're not a Skywalker. I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
We're not all Skywalkers, you know.
Well, so with the exception of that line, I'm completely agreed with you, with all of you. I do want to say there's really just like maybe two pages right here that I'd like to just go through. And again, I can't really pull off the performance, but just, you know, at least give it an idea. I wouldn't mind as we get into this Luke voiceover, you know, if somebody wants to do the full Twin Sons, John Williams, you know, do your own voice rendition of that music. I think it'd be a really good background for this.
I think Chris is the man for that job.
Yeah, let's. I think Chris. Here we go. Let go, Kylo. You can't defeat us. Kylo says, "Us? I am not alone. Obi-Wan was right." Rey drags her shattered body up the temple steps. Her arm gives out. She collapses. The pain is too much. We're connected, all living things. Leia looks beyond the battle, feeling Rey's pain. Leia says, "Rey, the Force surrounds us." Rose winces from a spark. She rewires the hyperdrive in the capital, fingertips bleeding. She looks up, a feeling. It penetrates us. Poe flies through a barrage of laser fire. It binds the galaxy together. He feels the connection from across the galaxy. Poe says, "Rey." Rey into the rain. Poe, she says, "Finn." Finn is crouched low behind cover, lasers flying overhead. We are one, bound by the Force. Finn feels the connection, a surge of hope. "Fight, Rey, fight." Rey hears him. He's there with her. They all are. Finn, in a distant voiceover, "Fight." Interior of Mortis. Luke gives his former student a faint smile. "And we will not be broken." With all her strength, the Last Jedi rises. She unwraps a strip of cloth from the bandage on her hand, uses it to blindfold her eyes. Luke vanishes. Beyond him, Rey stands tall in the arched doorway, blind, bruised, determined. "Our masters were wrong. I will not deny my anger, and I will not reject my love." Her fallen lightsaber flies into her hands. "I am the darkness, and I am the light. You are nothing. You are no one." She ignites the blades. They crackle. No one is no one.
Oh, no one is no one. So good.
So good. I just, the inner so cutting good. Of that scene, of going back and forth to all these other characters, and Luke doing the voiceover of what he once heard from Obi-Wan, to bring it all back around to what was our first Star Wars experience, obviously not the original part of episode one of the story, it felt really right. It does take really hitting that performance and doing that well, but I feel like they could have done that. But the thing that really stood
maybe they
out
could have got Ryan to come in and direct
that
direct
scene.
Hamill.
That would have been great. Yeah, that would have been needed. But I think
right after this, though, there should have been a, "Oh, I'm hearing something over the comms," and then "No one is no one, but we're a lot of one."
But I do want to say that I think the thing that stood out
works
to me
every time
about this inner cutting of all the people who matter to Rey, fueling her mm-hmm. on, telling her to fight, helping her continue forward, you know, the way that Rocky's thinking about Adrian, getting her to get up from the mat. No, I'm kidding.
Who?
I love this because
sorry.
Rey didn't need to be all of the Jedi. She had no connection to the majority of those Jedi who are speaking to her in The Rise of Skywalker. That idea of her being all the Jedi is not nearly as powerful as being all the people and being with all the people that mattered to her in her life. That would give her more strength to overcome the dark side than a bunch of, you know, voices that are really not meaningful to her or us as the audience. They are meaningful to us as the audience because of the fact that we know who they are. So yeah, it gets on, pulls the nostalgia string. But it doesn't mean anything to us watching her react to them because she doesn't know who most of them are. And so I think the idea
she
of her family.
She, like I, have not caught up on the Clone Wars.
But the idea that this her newfound family is what's going to give her the strength to defeat the dark side or to overcome the lack of balance between dark and light is so much more powerful and more meaningful. And again, you put that, you know, even if it's Chris doing the score on his own or John Williams, it's just as effective to me.
Mike, they did ask me. Put, it's like it's saying that she doesn't need to be something. She needs to be her.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And then, yes. And then to get the send-off from Obi-Wan is like, can you imagine in the theaters if it was Ewan doing that?
Which part are you talking about?
Am I ahead where Obi-Wan talks to her?
Oh, you're talking about jumping forward.
Oh, I jumped forward.
Yeah. Ah. I was like, where are you right now?
Sorry. Nope. We'll pause that thought. My page flipped. I just saw Obi-Wan today. I was like, oh, I didn't know he was in this end of the scene. Oops.
Classic Crispy.
Well, but, you know, I think the other thing is that this is not the final moment, but it's really our realization that balance is possible, and the balance has been talked about in Star Wars for the entire history of Star Wars is paid off here and recognized here, that no one has been able to achieve the balance between the light and the dark, and we get into more of that conversation in what you're talking about, Chris. But I thought we've been building to this. This is all that we've talked about. We've never seen what balance is. Balance felt like one side kept winning and then things would never be resolved. Talking about an actual balance in episode 9 is what says this is final. This is actually winning because you balance. You no longer have the light and the dark so opposed. They're going to live within all of us. And that's what would have been a fitting and rewarding conclusion to 9 film saga, even though this isn't.
It's like a little bit like what's the Pixar movie about feelings?
Inside Out.
It's a little bit like Inside Out, where it's like, it's okay. You can be all of these things and be a whole human.
And
it
also that,
have to be.
That insisting that your lightness or your darkness is binary will inevitably lead to failure in one way or another. Because it's an impossible fight to have.
Well, and this is a little bit like what I mean, this is sort of related to what I was just saying too about like Luke's journey in the original trilogy. You know, I think there's a reading of it where, you know, Luke sort of is the balance in the original trilogy, because like we do see him go from like, you know, as his path to becoming the Jedi is muddy and it's unclear and it's impure, and we see him like, you know, fight with anger and have to like, you know, release the anger and choose, you know, the calmer path. But like, I don't know, I think there's a case to be made or an argument to be made that like Luke as a character, you know, could have, you know, like what was interesting about him was that he, even if they didn't put a button on it, like he represented that balance, you know, that sort of mix of like, he's not some, you know, lily white, pure, perfect, you know, hero. And I think this trilogy seemed to be actually like, or this proposed script to end this trilogy seemed to really be actually making that text rather than subtext, or making that part of the story rather than a
reading.
It's kind of
like, they still never, even though Luke, so when like Luke makes the decision to go to Bespin and like save his friends, Obi-Wan and everyone's kind of like, oh, but no, you have to do this thing that's been prescribed, and this is how we've always done it, and if you leave, you're wrong for leaving. And he ultimately like saves his friend, but then now Luke kind of had a bit of that in Last Jedi, where it's like, no, you have to do it this way, because this is the way. And they finally kind of turn it on its head to say like, well, wait a second, we can rewrite this book. This is not how everyone lived. Like, this is not what you need. You have to find your own path, and that's okay.
Also, if you look at like where when these things were made in terms of the original trilogy, the sequel trilogy, which is an extension, or the prequel trilogy, excuse me, which is an extension, and then the sequel trilogy, if you look at like just the emotionality of how we know as human beings is like healthy way to deal with emotions, it's like shifted. You know, if you look at like Anakin says that he's afraid, Luke says that he's afraid, and Yoda, who we know as being wise, I love Yoda, obviously, but his answer, as the best that he can do, is just like, you can't feel that way. Don't feel that way. It only leads in a bad place. But there's no tactic for how he's supposed to not feel that way. It's just like, don't. Like, you need to put that, push that feeling down. And here it's like, you feel that way, and you need to learn how to channel that so you can have the entire range of emotions without potentially turning into a murderous villain.
Right. So you can shoot lightning out of your hand to maybe turn on some lights and then heal a snake creature at the same time.
That's right, Chris.
And I feel like that's such a stronger message, though, because we all deal with that. Yeah. Especially as we all, like, mental health has become much more prominent discussion in our culture in the last, you know, half decade. And the idea of balancing within ourselves is so much more important and feels so much more in line with what Star Wars has always been teaching us. And what I remember as a kid and even thinking of The Empire Strikes Back and the way that Yoda is talking about this stuff, I think it's this culmination that makes me think, oh, yes, if I can balance my worst instincts against my best instincts, I'll be the best version of myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's well put. that's beautiful, Mike.
Getting there. The script has done it for me, guys.
It's just cool to see an episode 9 that had thoughts and ideas in it.
Yeah. Thoughts and ideas, and we've said it before, but like that also, you know, kind of honored and continued on what had been set up. I mean, this is your highway example, Ryan, where it's like, you know, if the highway is being built, even if it wasn't the way you'd build it, build from where you are.
Yeah.
You know,
don't just drive where you would have driven.
Yeah.
If you had
We don't know what Colin Trevorrow would have done with this script as a director or anything, and we may have,
let's be honest, nothing interesting.
It may not have been the most, it could have been beautiful, it could have been great, but it may not have been, and there may have been directorial choices that really made it suffer, or the producers could have gotten involved and sanded off rough edges that, you know, weakens the script or something. But just the idea that this picks up where we were and does interesting things with the characters that we had is just such a better step. I hate that The Rise of Skywalker is what we got. It sucks.
Yeah, it does. Ryan, I think you said this previously on the podcast. Let JJ direct this script. Like, if JJ would have directed the script, it would have been fine. I mean, he's never going to do that.
Like,
he's got too much ego to allow someone to write a script.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on someone I've never met, but Mike, you're absolutely right.
I'd say let Favreau do it.
I knew you were going to say that just to piss me off.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say
that. He would have had a Max Rebo scene in there, and it would have been money.
So after the conclusion of that interaction between Rey and Kylo, they go back to fighting, and Rey fights him blindfolded, guided by the Force, which we talked about is just kind of this awesome ability to see that play out, that she can anticipate every move. I'm almost imagining Neo in the Matrix at the end of the first film, and now she can just do it all, and Kylo can't keep up. We cut
and
back.
I've told you, in fantasy stories, I have a real soft spot for people with sashes over their eyes.
Oh yeah,
and that new dark crystal. Ooh, thought that was great.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, I
think
I need to finish that.
Yeah, that trope. I never get tired of that trope.
It's
of
just
like
awesome.
Somebody that was like basically to the empty meter of their power gas tank, and then they come back.
Yeah,
way past empty. Like,
and
it's
they
so
have
much
what
fun
we
to watch.
What we may feel in our world is a deficiency, and it's their strength. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, it becomes
it's a shorthand to show that someone is in tune with like their world in a way we can't imagine.
It's Matt Murdock, people with sight.
Like
I imagine after that, it just makes it hard to have a conversation with that person because they're like, "Do you know what I've just done?"
Yeah, and you feel judged by them.
Yeah, you're like, oh man, I must have missed that. Oh, you missed that? You didn't see that?
We should say it is like sometimes though it is a little problematic to like kind of take what is, a disability of blindness and like make it like a magical thing and like a superpower. We should just like acknowledge that like isn't always appreciated by every community.
Of course.
Speaking purely from my own perhaps ignorant perspective, I do agree that it's like super cool in this movie, but I want to like acknowledge just for everybody.
No, and
that,
I
like,
appreciate that. And also, I'm not trying to like back. I because I knew that you were struggling with the word. I don't know if the term like differently abled applies to blindness. I don't know if we're using the right vernacular.
If you know, please write in. I believe. Well, I the latest sort of like training I had at a place I worked very recently. Was that actually disabled is currently the preferred term. The differently abled is actually outmoded. But it does change. And so, guys, language is important. Look it up. And if you're not sure how to refer to someone, you know, ask them.
And if you think that we should have referred differently, please write in. We're happy to learn.
Yeah, for sure.
Moving back on. So... is as we return to the eclipse, there's burning resistance fighters, there's problems on the ground. Leia hears from Connix, also known as Leia's daughter in real life, and more ships arriving from the Outer Rim, General. Prepare to retreat. These aren't First Order ships, and Leia looks off the starfield ahead of her and is surprised. A massive fleet of smugglers and thieves flying tricked-out, junkyard-bound personal cruisers, the pirates Han Solo spent half his life running from. In the lead, Lando's personal starship, the Lady Luck. Lando Calrissian helms the controls. Thought you could use a few scoundrels.
Ah, there you
go,
Ryan.
Nice. So good. Great line. Great name for a ship for Lando. It's like pretty perfect.
If it was like the Lady Lucky Luck, so it was three L's for L3. That's what I would have liked.
There you go.
You know, Chris, I feel like this is actually your big moment, because I got to assume if it's the people Han Solo spent most of his life running from, we got to assume
Ganja Club
is there.
You think we got Duquesne. We got Concha Club.
Yeah.
We got the Irving boys.
I mean, this is the perfect moment where it's like, hey, we can kill Han Solo, but you guys can't. I love that kind of stuff.
It's a real, like, you don't speak out of the family.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would have been, it would have been funny, and it would have like kind of just said like, oh, hey, everyone's kind of in this fight. Even though, who knows what those... If they're hauling Rathtars, what are they doing with those?
They're dropping Rathtars on the Star Destroyers?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That would have been amazing if Conja Club's unleash the Rathtars, and they, like, open up a vault.
It'd be cool if Finn was like, you're dropping Rathtars, and someone, we're dropping Rathtars.
Or if they were...
Oh, man. I would have loved to have seen some Rathtars in this.
It would have been actually very funny if there was, like, an internal argument where it's like, somebody was just like, you know, like, open the holds. But that's, you know, and they're like arguing over like the value or like how much money it was.
Well,
or something.
Someone in Conja Club would see it dropping and he'd be like, he owed them to me. I'd be like, well, you owe me. And then there could be some victory.
Oh, yeah. And then their motivation becomes capturing the Rathtar, but it's just like on a destructive path.
There'd be something very funny to me about seeing like this long shot of a screaming Rathtar dropping.
Yep. Oh, and I could just picture the stormtroopers going like, Rathtars, Rathtars. Oh, man, that would have been amazing.
What a missed opportunity. Of all the things in this script.
Is that even it?
Is that even in this script?
It's not.
Oh, man.
Well, Lando does arrive. The fleet joins. Finn, Chewie's yelling, we got company. They're all happy. They're thrilled. Rose gets the codes from BB-8. There's more battle that kind of occurs in the next few pages of the script. Then
this next part is crazy to me.
Well, it's so here we go, is that essentially the Falcon does make one last descent. The Falcon crashes, takes out a bunch of walkers, not fully destroyed, Chris. Don't worry, the Falcon is still out there. But the ship grinds to a halt. It's barricaded in front of the steps. The alarms are blaring in the Capitol. Chancellor Hux says, bomb the city, decimate every last being. Selleck says, our forces are outnumbered, sir. Hux realizes the tragic truth. He lost the Star Wars. Now, that is in the script. It is not dialogue.
They must have, like, put that in, because it's underlined also. They must have put that in as, like, a goof, right? Like, they thought it was
Yeah, there's a little bit of his personality in this script. I think...
He lost the Star Wars. It's one step away from saying they truly were Star Wars. But the craziest thing about it is that Hux, immediately after this, goes and performs Harakiri on himself.
Yeah.
I kind of love it, though. I kind of love it.
At first, when I read it, I thought maybe he was like a buffoon and he like turned it on wrong.
Oh.
But then I realized that he was performing Harakiri on himself.
But he does it with a purple blade that he collected. So Mace Windu takes out Chancellor Hux.
It'd be cool if like he drops and then like Mace Windu's ghost appears holding the lightsaber.
Yeah. Oh yeah, like if it's like a back shot, right?
Yeah, that'd
and then
just
you
be
see
fun.
The purple go through his back and then it pans around and you see Mace Windu holding it.
And Mace like, Windu was guiding Hux this whole time to his death. It's dark. And then a Raptor lands on Hux.
That scene is just not of the same ilk of the rest of the movie, but all right, whatever. Like, I'm sure it would have been
seconds. I just kind of find it as like the way they've shown Hux as this obsessive who was trying to collect lightsabers, to learn the Force, couldn't access the Force. It does feel out of place. It really does. But I don't know. I got a laugh out of it. I just found it like they've been so absurd with Hux, and I'm like, this.
Well, it seems out of place because like no one in this universe has ever done this before. That's not like that's a practice true. We know of. It's like again, it's like it's taking the outside knowledge that the Jedi are based on samurai, and then taking that and being like, well, of course he'd perform ritual suicide on himself, which is like baffling. It's just so strange.
It feels like what they wanted. It feels like it's like two ideas smashed into one, which is like the idea of, you know, essentially like, you know, Nazis upon losing, upon realizing they were losing, who like killed themselves, which is like a real wartime thing that it is like, you know, the First Order is clearly a parallel to the Third Reich and everything, and then it's also take you like you say, Ryan, the samurai, you know, Harakiri imagery, and smashing them together and being like, yeah, but it's Star Wars, so we do it with a lightsaber. And it's maybe the challenge is it's like, are we certain it's the right character? But I think part of something we need to remember is that like the Hux that we get in this movie like is very different. Like I do think like while him trying to use the Force is a comedy beat like throughout the movie, he's like, he definitely feels like darker and more serious than definitely than what we got in Rise of Skywalker, but even than what we saw of him, like he was very much the butt of the joke throughout The Last Jedi, and this plays him as more of a real threat. So
in Force Awakens he was very serious, screaming.
Yeah, so this works for me actually. I mean, the whole thing, he lost the Star Wars, like it feels like, well, if we had the Clone Wars before, like there probably would have been a different name for this war.
Yeah. That's one for us, yeah.
Well,
I like it.
We've got about 10 more pages, and I think a lot more discussion, because there's a lot more that's going to come up about what we want to talk about Kylo and Rey and what happens in their final confrontation.
Don't you do it, Mike.
Here's what I'm going to say. I think we could power through here, and we could finish these 10 pages, but I think we're going to have wrap-up conversation anyway. So we could finish
after
these final 10 pages. There's a wrap-up conversation in here.
No. I'm saying after all this, we're gonna rush through the final 10 pages. No,
well,
sir.
Exactly. And so
talking part three, part one, part three, part two, part three, part four.
I'm open to the group. We power through here and finish, or are we gonna do the last 10 pages and wrap?
No. We need a break.
Part six, baby.
We gotta wrap, Mike. You're revealing the sausages.
And in reality, though. What a fitting conclusion to 9 chapters of a story that it just ends with General Hux impaling himself and we get nothing else.
Yeah, that's pretty... The end.
Well,
the
he lost
speak.
The Star Wars. It's over.
It's over. Why do we even wrap anything else up?
The next line is the dead speak.
It should have said in the script, he lost the Star Wars from the Journal of the Wills, Part 1, Luke Starkiller.
But that's on... Yeah. But the dead speak, that's in this script. It says
Fortnite.
It says character. It says audiences download Bejeweled.
And immediately reveal a plot point in the Bejeweled app.
Right.
I think that eventually we're going to get story notes in Happy Meals. You know, you have to go and buy a Happy Meal.
I'm down
for
it.
I don't think I've ever stayed alive in Fortnite long enough that I would even see the message.
Is there some sort of like waiting room where you could do that? I don't understand. Like, how do
there is like a game that like where you're not playing against other players? There's like an element of Fortnite that isn't the like shooting other players part.
Okay.
So it's like you just exist in the world and people watched it.
That's the night. That's the night part.
Yeah, that's when all the cool kids come out. Part.
Well, so we're gonna end it there. We're gonna be back for part six and our wrap up. Sam can't wait. Sam is so happy we're going on to part six. There's more to wrap up here. We're leaving this at Kylo and Rey. Rey battling blindfolded with the inability to see, but they're matched evenly. Kylo disappointed. He does not have the power that Mortis contains, and the stem is really tied with the addition of Lando and the smugglers. Seems like things are going to go their way, but will the Capitol escape in the First Order without General Hux, without Chancellor Hux? Will they get away in the Capitol ship? We'll have to find that out in part six. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Droids Pod on Twitter and Instagram, the Droids Podcast on Facebook, and of course, iTunes reviews. Let us know what you think. Let us know. You'll get a chance at one of those paintings that Sam has, custom made just for you, any scene you want. He will do whatever you say. I actually think he's going to do a portrait, a full size, what, 18 by 24 portrait, Sam? Is that what you're making?
Oh my God. Mike is over. Guys. Here's the thing. It's gonna be a small painting. It'll be a portrait of a character or a ship or a scene from the movies that you like that you can hang on your wall. They're beautiful. We're posting them on our Instagram at DroidsPod.
If you're looking at it from outer space.
There it is. There it is, guys. I'll just do what they say.
Also,
what else is new?
For those of you
also.
Who watched the live stream, one of you will also be getting one of Sam's paintings. So, look out for a DM from us.
Oh, yeah.
Also, if I may selfishly just promote my Twitch channel, Coping Mechanics, it's twitch.tv/copingmechgames. We've been talking about... We've been having fun over there. We've had some guests and stuff. I'm going to have some of the droids on, hopefully. We're talking about video games and how we use them to deal with stress. But it's not a very stressful time right now, so I don't know what we're going to talk about. Just kidding. Hope everybody's staying safe and healthy out there. This is crazy times.
And the droids are here with you. We'll be with you each week. We'll keep on. We're looking forward to doing more lives. Let us know. Email us droidspod@gmail.com. We're having so much fun doing this, and we can't wait to continue. And I feel like this is one of those things that just makes these difficult times a little bit better. Spending an hour or two extending this podcast indefinitely, so Sam has to keep on waiting for us. That's kind of what I'm loving right now.
It's my greatest joy.
That will do it for the droids you're looking for, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw?
Annie? Do you have any moof milk?
Who's that guy?
I'm looking for some moof milk.
Sounds like a hipster Star Wars character.
Yeah, I'll have the coffee, but do you have moof milk?
Chris, I'd love
actually,
you
I could
do that.
Only drink moof milk.
When this is all over, go into a Starbucks and actually do that as a sketch.
Ask for moof milk.
That's pretty funny. I like that.
And they're like, "Yeah, we have it." I'm like, "Oh no." He lost the Starbucks.
Hux lost the Starbucks.
Star Hux. Oh, man, Hux was clearly named after a Starbucks because they said JJ and what's-his-name were walking around in the streets of New York City. Clearly, he just looked at a Starbucks like, Hux.